And welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamfro, naturopathic physician and host for this program. And we're really excited to have you on and listen and learn and grow in the field of medicine, and particularly natural medicine or alternative approaches to things. And you can always get more information about some of our up-and-coming events and things at the Natural Nurse's website. That's naturalnurse.com. Or if you need to contact me, drznaturally.com. So we have a very special guest, an author of a book called Life in a Whirlwind of Numbers, 26 Years of OCD, by David William Dahlberg. And David has lived many lives, from talking to Mickey Mouse in the 1962 Seattle's World Fair to his modern-day role as a school teacher, sports and music addict, and father. But Mr. Dahlberg suffered through a childhood of anxieties that morphed into OCD from the age of 14 into his 40s. And much of his own youth was spent living with what seemed like an untreatable, unnamed condition, which now we call obsessive-compulsive disorder. And trying to hide the condition, as many OCD sufferers do, he lived partially functional life. But his high academic aptitude and exceptional memory allowed him to function as a reasonably normal person, but not the highly functional one locked behind the bars of OCD. His perseverance to function and be normal drove him to fight his OCD every day, and then finally, decades after onset, the OCD was defeated. Now cognizant of the early symptoms of OCD, he's able to recognize these things in his younger daughters and get her treatment that he had been denied. And he lives in Snohomish with his successful wife and daughters, who sing, ski, race, and although busy, have a lot of fun. And he has the, we've had the honor of actually being housemates in Seattle when I started at the Bastyr University, started my naturopathic training. So I actually have had a good time to observe Mr. Dahlberg and look forward to discussing these things with him. How you doing, Dave?
Z, it's so good to hear your voice again. Hello?
Yeah, good morning.
Oh, our phones are being a little funky here at home.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, doing quite well. I'll have to add that for your audience, that even back then you were a very understanding, sympathetic person. And when I was on hold, I think I heard one of your older programs talking about Buddhism and the path to joy. And I think you were already on that path when we met, and it was a good example to have you there. To follow. You were a very calming influence on my life at that point.
Thanks. Yeah, it was great to read your book. Your book is a kind of an autobiography in a way, and divulging your struggle, day-to-day struggle with this malady. Tell us a little bit about a brief description of OCD, and then we'll kind of backtrack into your book.
You bet. Obsessive-compulsive disorder, and at least to the way it affected me. I'm not a doctor, but being treated for OCD, the book, I'll qualify my description of OCD with the fact that it was my OCD. I've read accounts of others. But even the smallest things can trigger a reaction in your brain that makes imagined anxiety feel absolutely real. So if something comes up in your mind that you're afraid of, for instance, I had a friend that died of cancer when he was about 15. I was 14 when it really came on. And I was afraid of it, getting cancer. The rest of the time, I would do little rituals and things like that to try to take my mind off it. And what happens is, as soon as you stop the ritual, the thought comes back even worse, and you have to do more rituals. And you can end up consuming hours of your life on a daily basis, and for me, that's a lot of wasted time. And OCD is really about not just being anxious, but actually wasting your time and wasting your life, if I could have those hours back, I would have a lot of hours.
Yeah, I read that throughout your book, and it's very interesting the way you spell out rituals and your trying to deal with the unwanted thoughts and things like that. But that's that's your manifestation of OCD. What is it like for other people that you've been able to hear about and read about?
Well, the easiest thing to grasp onto right there, Dr. Z, is it runs in my family. Unbeknownst to me, my grandfather was electroshock treated for depression. My brother, Steve, who is 2.5 years younger, and a family physician at the Everett Clinic, came down with OCD during his medical school when he was under tremendous stress. And what he has is called pure OC, where the images and thoughts and the anxieties come, but you don't do rituals like I did. You just completely lose the ability to function. In my daughter's case, it was combined with what she would do is she had to have things perfect. For me, repetition was the key. For her, if something didn't look or feel perfect, like a school paper, she'd get almost all the way done, and then she'd crumple it up and throw it out. Other cases of OCD that I've heard of, for instance, and it's a book by Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. He wrote a book called Brain Lock, and that was the book that actually helped me cure myself. And he would talk about people with OCD. For instance, hoarders are people with OCD. One case that he brought up was there was a man who was obsessed with battery acid, and every night he'd have to go out in the street with buckets of water and clean all the battery acid that he thought was on the street so it wouldn't make its way into his house and contaminate him. A lot of people are obsessed with contamination, getting something on their body that they have to wash and wash and wash off, and you've heard of compulsive hand washing. Well, that's a form of OCD. There are so many manifestations, but they all involve a tremendous amount of time, and they all are based on the power of anxiety.
Yes, it was popularized in the hit series Monk, a detective who displayed symptoms of OCD, and it kind of brought it into focus in a lot of people's minds as to how disempowering it could be. When did you first become aware that you had OCD, David?
Well, that's a question that we could look at two different ways. When I got to be in my mid-teens, I would perform ritual after ritual. I knew something was wrong. I said, why am I tying my shoes 30 times in a row? So I knew I had something, but I had no idea what it was, and it persisted, and I really thought I was crazy in a bit of a way, so I never told anyone about it. I didn't actually find out what OCD was until I was diagnosed with it in 1997, and that was still very early on in the recognition and treatment of OCD. And when I was diagnosed with it, that's when I heard about it, and I read up on symptoms of others and says, wow, that's me. And my doctor diagnosed with the OCD, and so it's kind of a two-edged question. Now, once I knew what OCD was, and I knew how to approach it and treat it, later on, when I had daughters, I was extremely fearful that they would come down with OCD, because it does run in the family, as I found out at that point. And one of my daughters, my older daughter, Callie, she did not have the manifestation. But my younger daughter, whom I previously mentioned, she went to school. She had trouble with doing things repetitively. She fell behind. She felt very anxious all the time. And one day when she was in second grade, she came home so depressed and just so frustrated that she said she wished she was dead. And it was kind of at that point that I realized we've got a problem here. She's acting like I used to act, only she's being open with me. I was always trained by my father to keep my problems to myself, especially ones like that. And that allowed me to get her treatment. So now that we know what OCD is and we can treat it, I decided to open up about what I'd had and tell people, well, you know, I had it. I was treated for it. I was successfully treated for it. And there's no reason anybody should have to suffer from it.
Yeah, we'll talk about some of the treatments that you did and your past, and you know, many other paths as a naturopathic physician and also a Chinese doctor of Chinese medicine. We have a different way of looking at things than the Western way it looks at things, and maybe we'll touch upon that at some point so we can give the whole pantheon of treatment options for people. But I'm curious, what else? What are some other things? I mean, your story goes into, your great detail growing up with that and also sleep problems. You've been plagued with sleep problems and an inability to turn your mind off at night. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, you know, I've always had trouble sleeping. I would lay awake. I remember laying awake for at least an hour after everybody had gone to bed and the complete silence in the house. And at first, I didn't really worry at night. I just had a lot of thoughts. And eventually, I would drop off, but of course, I'd lose sleep and be tired. Later on in life, when my OCD manifested more, it allowed me to stay up and obsess all night. I had a couple of instances, many instances, where I would stay up all night. And because of my inability to sleep, I couldn't shut my mind off. I went through many a ritual. Now, in fact, now the next thing is something maybe you can help me with, and that's about the age of when I had my first daughter, about the age of 39 or 40, I simply lost the ability to sleep completely. Mm-hmm. The best I could do would be to doze off through the night, and I was feeling very, very tired for about 3 months, and I was having trouble getting to sleep. And suddenly I realized I really wasn't sleeping. I was just dozing. And tireder and tireder, I began to worry about missing work, getting sick. The obsessive compulsive really took off at that point in times of crises. And one morning I woke up and I simply couldn't get out of bed. I was like in the Gulliver's Travels. I felt like all these little ropes were holding me down. Mm. I couldn't even lift my head off the bed. And I believe my body just said, hey, if you won't listen to me and you're going to keep doing these things, I'm just going to take over, and now you're going to hold still and you're going to rest. And although it did get my body some rest, it didn't stop my mind from worrying even more about losing my job. And so that's when I really went over the top on the anxiety. And that's when I went and saw my family physician, who, after describing my symptoms to him, he says, you have OCD. And the first thing I asked him was, well, what do I need? And he says, well, first of all, I think we need to get you a good night's sleep. So over a period of 6 months, we went through a series of medications that allowed me to sleep. And once I was on a path to sleep, the OCD went back to a bearable level where I could usually control it. But it never went away. I would still find myself wasting time and obsessing in places where I wasn't observable. I still wasn't happy. I was sleeping better. But the OCD, the answer to OCD for me was not going to be the drugs that are used so often to at least take the edge off.
Yeah. And what are some other ways that affected your functionality, Dave? Like with work, I know you're a teacher. Did you find that it was difficult to teach, or did keeping focused on a task like that tend to keep the OCD symptoms at bay?
Well, there's a yes and a no there, Dr. Z. When I first student taught, I was so dysfunctional that I couldn't control my mind even when teaching. And I had to go back to school and get some more teaching skills. And while I was in school, and I can't remember if you were around then as my roommate or not.
Yeah, I think you were just, you had like you were doing your own business, doing sprinklers and whatnot, and then you decided to go back teaching. I remember encouraging you to do that.
Yeah. Yes, and actually, all the, you know, everything that I did was that it was an activity would take my mind off OCD. Mm. And there came a critical point where I was partially treated for OCD when, 1986, I was afraid I was going to fail a math final. It was my second year calculus, and I had a professor who was a brilliant man, a master of differential equations, but he hardly spoke any English. And he taught differentials, but it wasn't a differential class. He just solved everything with it. And you would read the book, and it was like, well, he's not doing anything in the book. He tried to go, well, anyway, out of a class of 27, all but seven dropped because I had to get into the teaching program. I needed that class. And I finally got so upset for the fact that I thought I was going to flunk this class, not get into the teaching program, that I literally, again, lost the ability to sleep, anxiety, went and saw my family doctor, and he got me started on a fairly new drug at the time, back in the mid-'80s, called Aprazolam, which we know as Xanax.
Mm-hmm.
And that took the edge off so well. It knocked down my anxiety so well that for a period of, 10 or 12 years, not even taking it all the time, but just knowing it was there, I was restored to a much higher functionality. But again, it didn't cure me. It just took the edge off. And I still wasted tremendous amounts of times when nobody was looking, like you mentioned, work. When I did the sprinkler business, we have to do wiring as well as plumbing and digging. And for me, wiring could be the most time-consuming job because I would have to cut a piece of wire and strip it. And if a bad image went through my mind, I'd have to cut and strip it again. I finally got to the point where I'd leave about 2 extra feet of wire so that by the time I got it cut and stripped just perfect, then I'd still have some wire left and I could make the connection.
Wow.
So you could imagine that how much that would add up. When you're doing work for people, I literally could have worked twice as fast and made a much better living at it. Although people were pleased with my work, they didn't know the all the time I wasted doing it. And since I charged by the job, it wasn't a big deal. But any real job I had trouble with because when I was being observed, I would do it just fine. But as soon as I was out of sight, I'd start doing the ritualization again, not having to hide it.
Well, that's a good point. So you clearly realized that something was going on. I mean, I remember living in with you. I thought that you had maybe Tourette's syndrome because, you know, of course, I was new to medicine back then, and we were kind of learning about all these different things. I didn't think that they had they didn't really have a term OCD back then, but there were some, you know, there were some things that I guess you did that was interesting. And but yet at the same time you felt like you kind of kept these things hidden. So you I guess you had a feeling that something was awry, but you couldn't really put your finger on it.
Well, exactly. And some of the things that I did, I guess this is typical of OCD sufferers, I was so embarrassed that I had these manifestations and conditions. I felt that if I told anybody, they would think I was crazy. And my brother, who's an MD, says, well, you know, if you're worried about it being crazy, you're not actually crazy. People who are crazy don't know it. Well, I knew there was something wrong, yes. And and having suffered it himself, he's well-versed in that. So as far as the Tourette Center, one of the things I would do is if I had a bad image come into my head, I would kind of look off to the side really quickly and imagining the bad image would stay in front of me, I'd look off and I'd have some other good thought posed off the left. Right. But then when my head came back, the bad image was still there. So I don't know if you ever caught me doing this, but I would turn my head this way and that way, sometimes rather quickly, almost jerking it. I had a sore neck after doing this for several years and had to actually go see a chiropractor. But and if you saw me, and I know you would have observed me, if you can't do a external ritual, which OCD lends itself to, if you're being watched, you still do internal rituals. You'll count in your head, and you'll do things in your head that make up for it. And other people perceive this as you tuning out and being antisocial and dysfunctional. And I had very few friends when I was growing up who actually understood that underneath there was someone that was a decent person that they could like. But I would put off a lot of strangers, a lot of people I'd just met, because they would see me, quote, zoning out when I was actually internally ritualizing. I would become paralyzed, literally. And so even if you didn't, I could say that I hit it, but my dysfunctionality revealed it. And that's one of the ways I was able to help my daughter out. I recognized that dysfunctionality and was able to get her in for treatment.
Yet at the same time, you're a brilliant guy, Dave, so you were able to kind of compensate by, you know, doing things, and you still managed to eke out a existence, socialize, have friends. I've met many of your friends over the years, great people. And still, but I guess you felt that you never really, that this kind of held you back from your true potential.
It really did, especially in things like math and science. And I actually am a math teacher now, and I ended up teaching science once I'd gotten over the condition. And I would have trouble with some of the deeper, more intricate thoughts where you've got to go deep within yourself and just let things process. And my mind was already processing so much, it was like a computer stuck in high gear, you know, kind of, what do we call that, a computer crash?
Yeah.
But in a lot of other classes, English and history, I would be, the night before a test, what I'd usually do is I'd read the entire textbook, and then I would, for a final, and then I'd go in and get an A on it. So I have a very, very good memory for words, and once I start reading, and not so much having to analyze, understand, I have extremely good retention. And, of course, that was one of the reasons I was able to put such detail into my book. And I guess one of the best examples is after I went on Xanax, I'd been keeping about a 2.7 grade point average in the math program at the UW. And as I went on the Xanax, what happened is I started getting A's in math. All of a sudden, I could think and concentrate without anxiety and anxious thoughts breaking up my concentration. So my GPA in college and beyond, I got a master's eventually. It was a 2.7 before, and ever since I've been on at least partial treatment for OCD, my GPA overall was a 3.9. Mm-hmm. And I was also able to do things like, well, if there's a project to do, let's say the pump needed replacing in my because I did a lot of work with pumps when I was a sprinkler system. Well, we live on a well now. And I went down, and the pump was bad. I had to replace it. I had to take it out, rewire it. And by the time I did it, and this was just not so recently, it took me like half an hour. And I just thought of all how long it would have taken me if I still had had the OCD. I would have had to take it in and out a certain amount of times to make the right number. I couldn't have put it in with any images in my mind. I would have had to cut the wires exactly right, and it would have taken me 4 hours. It would have taken me half a day or more. And so the efficiency, not just in academia, but in all my chores, and it felt good to be able to do that as well.
Well, it's exciting that that you've conquered OCD. Now, let's talk about, you know, there's an old saying, preventive medicine is the best cure. Can OCD be prevented, do you think?
I'm not sure if it could be entirely prevented, but I think, for one, if it's caught early. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about preventing OCD has nothing to do with drugs.
Yeah, or neurotransmitters or other things like that, because there's other levels of treatments that we want to talk about, which I think helped free you from your OCD. But back to prevention, I mean...
Well, you know, one of the things that made my OCD come on early was not just the fact that I was an anxious kid, but I had an extremely authoritarian father. And every time I tried to share a thought with him, well, here's, you know, I'm anxious about this or something's wrong, I worried a lot about getting sick. I had my tonsils out. A friend had an appendectomy. And I would confide in my dad, who was a dental surgeon, very knowledgeable about medicine, about all these little fears I had. And by the time I was eight, he'd labeled me a hypochondriac, which basically means he had told, he was telling me he wasn't interested in listening to my my sharing my thoughts and feelings with him. And at that point, I started keeping things to myself. Mm. If I'd had a chance to share more, if perhaps I could have gone in for some sort of evaluation, even at the time, I think that would have made a great deal of difference. And in fact, with my daughter, she was willing to share with me early on what was happening. And instead of poo-pooing her and saying, you know, suck it up or do your work on time, quit making excuses, you know, I recognized in her what I'd seen in myself. So I believe it could be recognized early, and the person could be made aware of it. Family and friends can be made aware of it. You know, awareness and vigilance, I think, are extremely good tools to prevent OCD. But you've got to be willing to listen. You've got to be open-minded, and you've got to be willing. You know, you've talked about mindfulness before. You've got to be mindful of it, and you have to look for things. And that has nothing to do with drugging a child or an adult. And when we talk about treatments for OCD, that's that's part of the treatment.
Yeah.
We can get to that in whenever you'd like.
Second half, yeah. Well, the National Institutes of Mental Health, it's interesting. They actually feel that OCD affects more people than schizophrenia, bipolar, or other types of, imbalances, whatever you want to call it. And certainly, some people have called these people just perfectionists or extremely organized in their work and or serving some type of a valuable purpose or, you know, things like that. But I guess there's a whole spectrum of OCD from mild to severe, which I guess some people have severe. Now, when they look at the PET scan analysis of patients with OCD, they certainly find some differences with their brain activity than, you know, other folks. Certain parts of the brain seem to be firing off, certainly at higher rates. There's a big shift in the glutamate receptors, which are one of the receptors that fire off and have been linked to everything from even epilepsy and seizure disorders to Tourette's and other types of what they call movement disorders. But in your case, the movement is sort of in the brain there. But it's interesting how the behaviors sort of just take on a mind of their own, and it's difficult to kind of keep them from popping up. Although that's just one way to look at it. In a meditation philosophy like the program before ours, the idea is to kind of see the thought and then learn techniques to allow it to drift away and not focus it. So some of it is learned. Would you agree that, Dave, that some of OCD is like learned and like the brain just gets hardwired into some behaviors?
It does. It really gets hardwired into some patterns. Where once you drop into what I'd call the OCD loop, you are stuck. And I'm one of those people who with my memory, everything I see just kind of goes in and just stays there. Mm. And I have trouble processing everything. And then I'll get stuck on a thought, and everything else, you know, kind of gets pushed away. And that increases, I believe, your subconscious just can't shut off, because there's so many things to process and you're only worried about one thing in general, whatever your OCD is, whatever ritual you're performing. And I did a lot of counting. I had whole systems of numbers set up where if I counted the wrong number or counted even at bedtime, if the clock said for instance, 10-13. Well, 13 is a bad number. It's an unlucky number. That was a number I couldn't do.
Actually, so that's my lucky number, but anyway.
Yeah, well, actually, my dad was born on 13, and I have no problem with any of those numbers now. He was born on March 13th. So I would have to take my feet off the floor at 10-14. And it wasn't just taking my feet off the floor once. I might have to take them off. And I made a list of numbers in my book that were good or bad. Let's say I had to take them off at off the floor like 9 times, okay? And then if a bad thought went into my head, then I'd have to take them off the floor 9 more times. And you can see what happens as you start to concentrate on this and you become more and more anxious, how that fight or flight syndrome kicks in. And your brain just, you can feel your brain just winding up. And all these things that you need to process get pushed aside, and they exert extra pressure, too. They have nowhere to go, so I think they actually light up your brain more. Now, of course, as a layman, that's one of my best explanations. But there's so much activity going on in the brain of someone, especially if they're manifesting OCD. As far as different stages of OCD, you'd asked about my definition of OCD before. My brother tells me that about 90% of the highly successful people have some sort of obsessive compulsiveness to them. And some of them may be OCD. Some of them may be just what we call plain obsessive compulsive, where the difference is if you're obsessive compulsive, you're a perfectionist, things have to be just right, but you enjoy making things right. You enjoy lining up your little toy soldiers on the shelf, and you feel good about it. Or someone with OCD might have the lineup of toy soldiers on the shelf because something bad's going to happen if they don't, or if one's out of place, something bad's going to happen, the anxiety increases. So you feel forced to line up the soldiers. Instead of doing it because you want to, you're doing it because you have to, and you feel trapped. You feel there's no way out. But even so, like Howard Hughes, for instance, was an extremely highly functional man whose OCD was never treated, and eventually, you know, took over his life. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of high functionality. I believe that people who have artistic tendencies, there's a history of people with artistic tendencies, writers, painters, all sorts of people who were very artistic or very good musicians or whatever, but they had that dark side to them. And perhaps it's a price that you have to pay. In some cases, you have this creativity, but it's spawned from all this angst and anxiety and torment.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we return with author David Dahlberg, author of Life in a Whirlwind of Numbers, we're going to talk about how he successfully conquered OCD using a blend of medicines and, more importantly, cognitive therapy. So when we return, we'll get into that. So stay with us. And welcome back to this edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. And we're on with David William Dahlberg, who's the author of Life in a Whirlwind of Numbers, 26 Years of OCD, where he gives an account of his struggles with OCD. I like reading the book because it's kind of like an autobiography of all the things that David's been through, and very detailed, like the way his brain kind of works. And it's just fascinating to kind of to allow yourself to be part of this whole journey that he took. And like I mentioned before, I kind of was, in a way, part of his journey as his housemate for a year. So it's kind of great that you wrote a book, David, and I'm real happy to have you on as a guest. Welcome back.
I'm honored, Dr. Z, to talk with you further this morning.
Well, you know, let's talk more about, in the last 20 minutes of the show, about, like, kind of what you did to... One of the things that we share is, I'm a black belt in Tang Soo Do and the martial arts and meditation and Tai Chi and sort of that mind of the martial arts has really helped me in life overcome lots of issues. Did you find that disciplines like these types of things helped you at all with the OCD?
Certainly, and there were so many ways it helped. First of all, it gave me an activity where I could focus on just that, and doing repetitions, kicks, punches. Eventually, when we learned to do sparring or kumite or free fighting, when you have to defend yourself and or attack someone else, and we would do this, we weren't pummeling each other like you would in MMA, but there was some contact. You completely drop your surface thoughts, and you become just kind of like a machine where your mind gives way to, what's the best way to do? We call it being in the zone or whatever.
Sure.
You are only aware of what you're doing against the other person, and you don't think thoughts. Things don't go through your mind because you're focused on a real situation. And the other thing about the martial arts that I enjoyed tremendously was the fact that, one, it was a good workout. It made me feel tired. I could sleep. And the third most important thing was I started out in a traditional Japanese karate school, and I've been training in a similar one, since about 1986 now. And one of the things that both of my senseis were in was into meditation and focus and leaving the mind behind and clearing your mind. And those three things, especially with the Eastern philosophy, I could feel a sense of calmness come over me during workouts that I could not get any other way. I was into other sports as well, which also I encourage anybody with OCD to take up some sort of physical activity. But the ideal activity would be some sort of, in my mind, some sort of Eastern where they focus mindfulness, like you say, where we're training our mind, not just our bodies. In fact, the mental becomes more important than the physical. I found that extremely, when the time came to apply that, I found it a very useful weapon in my arsenal that I'd already been conditioned to use to help me rid myself of the OCD.
Yeah, a study at the University of California in San Diego found that different types of meditation, whether it was yogic meditation or other ones, in treating OCD was as effective as any other technique that they looked at. So there certainly is a lot to that. But I guess a lot of people say, well, I find it hard to meditate because I find it hard to settle my mind. So what would you say to like a beginner or a novice that may be listening?
Well, I would probably quote or at least paraphrase a passage from a book called Zen for Westerners that was written years ago by a fellow American or Britisher who studied in Japan for years. And he talked about there's a physical cycle, and the best way to describe it is the mind controls the body, controls the mind. In other words, you find it hard to meditate. Well, one of the ways you can defeat OCD is just to hold still. There's a lot of people with OCD have to twitch, they have to do little rituals. Even inside one of the ways I would internally ritualize is I would move my eyes back and forth when nobody was looking or if I was in meditation. But what happens is, first of all, if you hold your body still, it sets up a circuit that kind of breaks the loop of anxiety. But the anxiety actually comes from your body, from false reflexes, from false feelings generated by your brain. If your mind holds your body still, then the next feedback loop is that your body calms down and stops sending those feelings of anxiety into your brain, and suddenly you're into a positive feedback loop. The mind controls the body, controls the mind. It's a symbiotic relationship. When you learn to separate the two, that's when you can start to make some progress on a disease like this.
Tell us a little bit about the cognitive therapy that helped you so much, and what is that, and how is it done?
Well, Once I started to get a good night's sleep, I thought I was okay, and then all of a sudden, well, it's still there. So my brother had given me a book that had helped him. It was by Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz called Brain Lock, I believe. It was one of the very earlier books written on cognitive therapy. And there were a couple different ways to do it. First of all, you have to recognize that I believe, and I know you believe, that we have an inner self or a soul that's really, although it's in our body, it's not really, so to speak, part of our body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the inner calm place where in Buddhism or meditation, that as your body's feelings drop away, you're left with that calm, clear mind. And the first thing I did was I said, okay, I'm going to really concentrate on seeing and feeling the difference before the two. And one of the things I got good at is when I get a bad feeling or an anxiety, I could say to myself, well, that's just a feeling. It's a sensation produced by my body. Because what happens is the anxiety seems so real, the fear seems so real, that they take over and start to control your mind, your physical part, your mental part, I'm sorry, is controlled by your physical part. So there's a real important key is, first of all, you have to recognize it for what it is. You have to know that it's a feeling that is a false feeling sent out by, like he said, bad wiring in the brain that we've set up with years of ritualizations, and recognize that your mind actually can, even though it can't control the sensations, it has a choice as to whether to acknowledge them or react to them. And one of the things I started off doing was what's called delay therapy, or I started off doing it in my car, where my car was a bad place for OCD. I turned my head this or that, and, you know, I'd roll my eyes. I'd do all sorts of little rituals, and it was torture driving to school every day. And so one of the tactics, and this is one of them from that book I mentioned, was, okay, I said, I read the book, I'm going to do this. And I started off one day, and I said, okay, I'm going to get a compulsion to do a ritual. I know it happens every day, but this time I'm going to wait 30 seconds until I give in to the compulsion. I'll still let myself do it. You know, things will be fine, but I'm going to wait 30 seconds. And that's where you really have to battle it, because the anxiety will increase if you put it off. But after a while, 30 seconds, so I can wait 30 seconds. And then I increased it to a minute over a period of days and weeks, and I increased it to 5 minutes, where I would say, okay, and it got to the point not only where I'd wait to do the ritual, and by the time 5 minutes had gone by, I was like, well, I don't really feel I need to do this anyway. And I didn't make myself do it anyway to see how silly it felt. And there came a day where I put it off, so, okay, 5 minutes from now, and 5 minutes came and went, and I was listening to some show on the radio, and I got all the way to school, and all of a sudden I realized, wow, it had completely gone away. And to me, the key is that you don't give the OCD energy. What you have to do is, no matter what thoughts come to your head, you have to not let them stop you from what you're doing. If a bad thought came into my head and I was writing with a pencil or something, I'd have to stop writing until I could kick it out of my head, which could take a long time. Instead, you go through it. It's like training. You train through the pain, you know, as long as it's not a bad injury. And anytime a bad image came into my head, instead of stopping what I was just doing, I would just keep going. And after a while, the anxiety started to really, really fade. In other words, I was reprogramming my brain not to give the OCD energy. Because as soon as you give the OCD energy, you do the repetitions, you can feel your body fall into that old circuit again, and you start feeling anxious. You feel like you have to do things. But, you know, once in a while I'll relapse and I'll find myself counting. No, I stop it. And it doesn't really matter of taking the energy away from your OCD. It's the fact of not giving it any energy. As soon as you give it the slightest bit of energy, as soon as you go into a pattern of counting or ritualizing or let it affect you in any way whatsoever, it's in control. But as soon as you stop letting it control your actions, you know, in other words, now the mind's controlling things, not your body,
mm-hmm.
then that's when it really started to go away. It's never gone, things pop into my head all the time, but I just let them come and I let them go, which is another, getting back to the Zen saying, you know, when you're meditating, all sorts of thoughts will come into your head, and they're not always good thoughts, but you let them come and you let them go. You don't fight them, you don't give them energy, and eventually your mind will calm, whether you have OCD or not.
Yeah, you know,
sort of a process. Yeah.
After I got out of school, Dave, I went to a silent meditation retreat where we went away for like a whole, I forgot whether it was 3 days or so, of just pure silence. And in the beginning, everybody, whether they had OCD or not, you felt like your mind was, as they say, a drunken monkey.
Mm.
But then after a while, mind calmed to the still point, such so that when it was done, nobody was talking. It was kind of funny. You'd think that you, when it's done, you'd want to blurt out and scream and yell and have conversations, but no, we became in that powerful state. So I think that might be something to look into as far as OCD, and also like you were saying, this exposure response prevention, where you would expose yourself to a situation which triggered your anxiety symptoms, and you learn to resist the urge to perform the compulsion. That's been well studied as something that definitely works, as well as thought stopping. Or did you ever practice like writing down you know, sometimes in cognitive therapy, you write down the abnormal thought, and then you kind of read it and say to yourself, well, I guess that's pretty silly or whatever. So you kind of teach yourself that way. I'm not sure if that's ever worked for you.
Well, you know, I never did that. Although when I wrote my book, I found myself remembering things that I'd pushed aside or forgotten or buried, mm-hmm. and it just came out. And I found writing the book very cathartic, and it actually helped me resolve some past feelings I'd had about it. And of course, friends of mine who read it said, wow, that was going on. And as far as me, my own OCD, my own OCD was the exposure, because my mind would never stop worrying. And all the time that you knew me, as long as I was conscious, I was worried and anxious about something. And so the exposure therapy for me was not reacting. I was exposing myself to not giving in. And, you know, with exposure therapy, and I guess this was a form of it, it actually increases your anxiety at first. But right. then as you find out bad things don't happen, then it really starts to drop off. So I think you're correct in evaluating what I was doing as exposure therapy, as a form of it. There's many different ways to do it.
And there's also neuroassociative emotional freedom technique, which is a kind of, I don't know if you've looked into that. It's very.
I'd like to hear about that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a book that you can certainly get if you look up, if you Google emotional freedom technique. You can download the free book, and it's a way of, believe it or not, it's a way of It's kind of like a way of exposure response prevention, but there's certain areas of the head and areas of the body that you actually tap, and the kind of like the tapping of your head in these particular areas is kind of interrupting patterns. It's like changing the radio station, driving the car, and you're kind of deep in thought, and then all of a sudden you go over a bump or change the radio station, and you just kind of change the energy. But you know, that's what Bob Marley said. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. Only you can free your mind. That was one of his famous songs in Redemption Song. So I always remember that the trying to get rid of the unwanted thoughts. Easier said than done, but it sounds like you've been very successful doing that. So in the last couple minutes of the program, is there a way that you can spot this in a student or a young person? How did you spot it in your daughter? And And then tell us a little bit about how we can get in contact with you and people could read your wonderful book.
Okay, well, as far as spotting it, one of the things that I would look for would be repetition. Mm. Like my daughter, we noticed she would write the same line over and over again and erase it until it was perfect. To me, that's an indicator that there's some anxiety there that says, okay, that's no good. I can't have that. It's going to kill me. So repetition, not being able to sleep, worrying. Now, my daughter was very, very open with this. And as we went through this, and she did eventually have to take some drugs to help her sleep as well mm-hmm. and fight off the OCD. And I told her, you know, this is a crutch, but you have to start thinking of yourself, and you have to start separating yourself from your brain, because your brain sends out these false signals. Your brain is what produces anxiety, and you feel it emotionally, you feel it physically. You've got to remember that your brain is lying to you when it does this, when you have OCD. And so you start thinking about, well, it's not me, it's my brain that's lying to me, and that's what's making me anxious, or my body is actually the source of the feeling of the anxiety. Separating yourself and being mindful of you versus your brain. And even at 9 years old, she became highly conscious of that. Mm. And she was able to use that mindfulness to help her become to reach her actual potential. Again, she still has it too. She still has her worries, but she's outgrown most of them. But again, anxiety, or say somebody's tuning out, like they're paralyzed. Those are symptoms of somebody obsessed with something inside their head. Again, repetitions, anxiety, tuning out, often an inability to sleep because your mind just won't shut off.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids are very vocal at first about what they're feeling. And so if you go with it and talk it over with them and you're knowledgeable about it a little bit, for me it was a personal knowledge, but there's so many resources out there. Schools have programs. There's books that have been written. There's all sorts of weapons we can use to recognize it now that we know what it is. Because for years it wasn't recognized. They thought psychotherapy cured it. It wasn't the fact that you had something repressed. It was the fact that you couldn't repress things and that your mind was constantly in high gear.
Right.
And you had to use some sort of physical calming, mental, zen-like approach to really block that cycle and start a new one. I would say, if you think you have OCD, if you find yourself repeating things, the first thing is just go see your family doctor and open up to them.
Or your naturopathic doctor. I got to put a good plug in. Because you live in Washington where, I went to school out there at the Bastyr Clinic in Seattle, and certainly there's many places, whether you decide to do a holistic route or a conventional route, it's all part of, all these medicines exist mutually inclusive of each other. We know now that we all can work together to achieve certainly a long-lasting benefit for the patient there.
Yes. Well, it was actually, you were the one who partly inspired me to look elsewhere for remedies besides just medical ones. And just a quick question for you maybe is, let's say somebody comes to you and they're exhibiting or presenting some kind of an OCD or anxiety or depression. As a naturopath, what are the advantages of someone going to a naturopath to get evaluated and try to resolve this condition?
Well, I'm looking at the time, but we have ways to kind of look at neurotransmitters and maybe use certain amino acids and things like that, and certainly look at nutrients and also use all the tools that we discussed already. So, okay,
yeah,
well, that about does it. Thank you, David, for that wonderful interview.
As far as contact information, you can look up Life in the World.
Tell us a little bit about where to get the book there.
you can go to Amazon or just Google Life in a Whirlwind of Numbers. This is actually the second edition of the book, which is much more focused on OCD, much sharper. And look for second edition. I've had several very good reviews from book review services. On Amazon, you'll find the book. You'll find, let's see. I think on my author page I put an email, but if you want to personally email me and ask questions, sure. Besides my page through Amazon, I'll gladly give up my email address.
Go ahead, Dave. Yeah.
And it's all one word, lower caps. It's David Dahlberg. That's David Dahlberg. And that's at Mac, like in Macintosh, mac.com.
Great. It was great to have you on, and look forward to having you on again to maybe talk about some other things with this ongoing subject. Thanks very much for listening, folks, to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You be well. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Z. Bye-bye.